Welcome to the NBA panel with your host, John Weatherspoon, and co-host, Brian Eisen. The NBA panel covers the league to keep you up to date with NBA news, movements, and stats. Join us as we discuss the sport that we love, the NBA. Now, here's Brian Eisen and your host, John Weatherspoon.
Yes, welcome to the NBA panel, episode 105. I'm your host, John Weatherspoon. Today, we're joined by arguably one of the best trainers I've ever came across. Part of Pure Sweat, we have Alex on today. Alex Bizzell. What's going on, Alex?
What's up, my man?
Everything's good. As soon as that story, Alex, we're laughing at something as we went on air live. But it's great for you to join us. Great for you to join us today. So how's your summer?
No,
how's your summer going on so far?
Good, really good. So it was a crazy summer. Finally, I get to sit down and relax for a little bit. I just kind of get to sit back and watch and see all the hard work that my guys and my girls put in. And now it's at this point, it is what it is. All the work that you put in, it comes to show, and everything you did in the dark comes to life. So it's an exciting time.
Exactly. Yes, you trained NBA and WNBA players. You worked with the great Candace Parker, and she's been putting in work. She's been picking in work for years.
It's weird. So it's weird because a lot of my athletes, they kind of start with me when they're really, really young, which is kind of what I prefer. But Candace was kind of the opposite. Candace, you know, she had already won multiple MVPs, champions. She's kind of done it all. Starting with her was a little bit different because she's the first client, and she'd probably kill me for saying this. She's the first client I have that's older than me. So I always let her know that she's kind of the old dog and old head on campus. But it's been really cool. It's been a relationship where I kind of get to pick her brain too on all the struggles she went through. And certainly I can use that with my other WNBA girls and even some of my younger guys on kind of the struggles, the ups and downs, the mental side of the game. And now at this point, it's she's got a stage where she's trying to work on her footwork and trying to sustain her greatness as long as she can. So she actually gets this year off. She's staying home. She's working for TNT. She's doing some Lakers stuff.
Hey, that's great.
Post-game, pre-game. And she's doing it all. But she finally gets to sit back and rest, and now we kind of get to focus on her footwork all off season. So it's a fun time.
Now I know you're an integral part in helping her work on her game on the floor, but do you have an opinion on her transitioning into, you know, the media and speaking out on social issues and gender equality and things of that nature? What's your take on her development as a woman in the sports world and trying to fight for those things in 2018?
Well, I think it's important on multiple levels. You have, you know, let's face it, the 2018 is a time where I think it's important for the younger generation, young girls that are looking up to Candace as an example. She's out there kind of proving, hey, you can do everything you want to do, literally, like, do anything that any man does, and it's okay to expect the same amount of benefits and opportunities that men get, because she's extremely smart. It's not like she's getting these opportunities because she's a woman. She's getting these opportunities because she knows the game, and she is more than qualified to do the job that any man can do just as so. I think it's important for her, and I think that it's definitely something that she's embraced and something that she is aware that she now has a responsibility to the younger generation to kind of to pave the way for them, just as previous players did for her. So it's kind of passing the baton in a sense, and I think she's taking full advantage of it.
You worked with Trae Young, one of the players that's coming into the league. He was one of the few players that averaged 15-5-1 through the preseason, which is great. He's in good company. Other players were, I believe, James Harden, Giannis, and John Wall. Yeah. What stood out about Trae Young to you when you started training him?
So it's weird because Trey and I started right towards the end of his senior year of high school. And that kind of, it was well before the Trey mania hit. And at the time, he was like the third or fourth ranked point guard in his class. And now, you know, we've progressed all the way to where we are now. But I think something that set Trey apart is passing ability. I think that's the best part of the game. He's still learning all the NBA reads, the rotations, and you know he's going against grown men. You're not going against 21 or 20 year olds. Now it's 28 to 32 year olds that have been doing this for a long time that have just been through more and experienced more. So I thought he had a great preseason. I think there's going to be times where he struggles, just like any rookie, just because of you know how much of a transition it is, and a lot of it's going to come with his maturity and putting on size. But he's played great through two games. So we're really excited with where he's at. He's one of those kids that's always trying to learn, and he's watching film. He's breaking down film and seeing what he can do differently next game. So, when all the eyes are on you, especially last year, and the whole defense is gauged to stop you, it becomes really difficult. And I think he's getting a little bit of, but he's finally got some relief this year with the guys around him. So you're not seeing him have to force as much. So I think he's kind of coming into his own, and he's maturing, and he's right on track to where we want him to be.
Yeah, cause in preseason, he hit a long game winner against the Spurs, which was crazy. He that was nice and calm. Like, he just stepped into it, like, bang.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was open. So he's like, all right, I'm open here. I'll just let it fly. I know I can hit it.
Definitely, definitely.
He's definitely had that confidence for a while now. That's because of the work that he puts in. With rookies, when you help train rookies, is there a way to try to prepare them for the infamous rookie wall? Is there a way to maneuver and navigate past that?
No, I think it's everyone's going to run into it regardless. I don't care how prepared you are. You go from 30 games to 82 games, and especially a kid like Trey, where he's expected to do so much for his team, it's really difficult. So there's going to come a point where it's going to happen. But now with all the film and all the stuff that we have, and certainly his coaching staff is preparing him as well as they can, and I think you can minimize it. I think it's going to happen regardless. It doesn't matter how good you are. It's going to come, but it's limiting how long it lasts and trying to push through it. Make sure your confidence doesn't drop because of it. And it's like anything else. You can sit there and talk about how tough it's going to be, but until you actually go through it, you don't really know. So it's just one of those things you have to go through, and you have to adjust and figure out a way around it.
You also worked with Bobby Portis, an established player in the NBA. I believe last year he averaged 13, and this one preseason game this year, he jumped up to 20. It's a one-game sample, but if he's aggressive like that, and I know he's going to get his playing time until Luke Cannon gets back, so he's going to get the go to show off. What can you say about Bobby Portis and his work ethic?
Man, Bobby's probably the hardest worker that I know. He's a no-excuse guy. I remember two summers ago, we were working out in L.A., and it was his first time in L.A. and dealing with traffic, and he was late. And it was his first time being late, and he literally apologized about 50 times. He's like, bro, this is never going to happen again. After that, he started literally showing up like 15 minutes into the workout before his, and our workouts usually go hour and a half, so he's just sitting there, wait. But that's the only time he's ever been late or missed anything. You never get a text that morning like, hey, bro, I can't go. When Bobby says he's going to do something, he's going to do it. And he's highly motivated. This is his contract year. Obviously he got a good offer from the Bulls before, right before that deadline hit, but, he wanted to kind of bet on himself and just focus on the year. And he's in a kind of a different spot than he anticipated. He kind of had been preparing for that six-man role off the bench. So, like our big goal this year was like, hey, let's go out there and just get sixth man of the year. And obviously he knows to get that, he's going to have to play really well. Team's going to have to win a little bit more than they did last year. But as soon as Laurie got hurt and went out for 2 months, it's like, okay, well, now what? Now he's
right.
starting. He's playing 35 a game, and which is, you know, he's excited about. He's, you know, Bobby's going to do what he's going to do. He's a guy that is highly confident. He gets the ball in situations. He knows he can score. He's going to attack and going to rebound and play hard. I think he's a great fit on almost any team because of how hard he plays.
Yeah, pick and roll with him and Zach LaVine gonna be crazy. they're both athletic.
Yeah, that's
can play with their back to the basket.
That pure sweat pick and roll is gonna be a deadly thing.
definitely.
It's always tough to stop pick and roll, regardless.
Yeah, supposed to be two players though.
So yeah, with supreme athleticism, it's like you're not gonna be able to stop that. Pick and roll is hard to stop in LA Fitness pickup, let alone with two freaks of nature like that. So
right.
Well, it just makes it tough when you got a big that can, you know, he can hit mid range, he can step out and hit threes, and he's comfortable putting on the floor. So you're kind of in a lose-lose situation as long as you have a point guard that can make the right reads. Because if someone's gonna, you know, help off their guy to get to Bobby, that's gonna leave somebody open. So, you know, anytime you get players like that in a pick and roll, I don't care who you are, it's just tough to stop.
Can you get us caught up on your career so up to this point?
Can you get a what?
Can you get us caught up on your career up to this point?
Yeah. So it's kind of crazy. I started back in 2013-14. I played one season overseas in Germany. I came home. I was actually preparing to go back over. I was thinking about going over to Italy and maybe possibly back to Germany. I had a couple different options. And I was training here locally in St. Louis. That's kind of right when I started with Pure Sweat, Drew. So Drew Hanlon runs Pure Sweat, works out a lot of guys, Jason Tatum, Joel Embiid, works out, you know, Bradley Beal, a lot of guys that came through St. Louis.
Right.
And that's kind of how I started with him. I played against him growing up. He kind of mentioned he wanted to start adding guys to this company. And, you know, I said I'd try it out and do it locally while I was still playing and see where it went from there. And it kind of just took off here with local high school, college, and even grade school kids. So I ended up stopping. I didn't even go back for my second season overseas because this was doing so well and I enjoyed it. And I thought I could do it at a high level. So I figured if I started early, I can get to where I wanted to a little bit quicker rather than wait until I'm 28 or 30 and try to do it that way. So turns out it was the right decision. within 2 years, I had this is now my fourth year, I think it is. Started in 14. This is my fourth year. And now I have, you know, all these stable of high-end athletes like Candace Parker and Trae Young and Bobby Portis. Get to work pretty regularly with Kobe and his girls, which is pretty cool.
That's crazy.
Now it's just wild. It's wild how all this happened. So I made the transition. How I started was my college roommate was Kirk Korver, Kyle Korver's youngest brother. So Kirk was like my best friend growing up.
Right.
Actually tragically passed away 6 months ago. But he's kind of how I got into it. So the Korvers and the McDermotts are family friends. Kirk knew Doug very well. Doug was playing for Chicago right after his rookie year. So I started working out, and that was my first client that gave me a chance. So from that, I got Bobby. Bobby was on his team, and I told both the guys because I wasn't established, and this is kind of the Wild West in terms of, like, what you can make and what you can charge on NBA players. I didn't really know. So I just said, hey, I want to prove myself. So once you guys get your next contract, then you can take care of me. So I was working for free for basically 2.5-3 years. Obviously I was making money locally with my academy. I had basically last summer, I had 250 kids that were training year round here in St. Louis. So, it kind of gave me the ability to do that and travel and go see these guys and work them out in the summer and kind of take a risk. And, so I was going down, Doug got traded a couple times. He went to New York. So I actually moved up to New York last November. So before that, he was with OKC. I was going down to train Doug. There was this kid named Trae Young and Norman, which is only 20 minutes from OKC. So I had to actually reach out to him. My AAU coach, who is now a college coach, was like, hey, you need to take a look at this kid. I think he's going to be pretty good. I had no idea who Trae Young was at the time. So I said, sure, you know, I'll work him out. So I started working this kid out, and we went a week, and he loved it. I couldn't believe he didn't have a trainer. But yeah, he seemed to really enjoy it. I noticed he just moved a little bit differently than anyone I've seen before. So I try to explain how Trae moves. It's most guys, when they stop, they have to come to a stop, and then they go. If you watch Trae, even on like his between the legs, his feet just kind of glide. So he's never fully stopped, and it makes it tough. And that's why I think like the Steph, he gets the Steph Curry comparisons, because they move a little bit differently than everybody else. Obviously, it's a very unfair comparison to have right out of the gate. Steph, I think, will end up possibly the best point guard of all time if he continues at this rate. But, you know, it is what it is. So I think Trae's in a good spot. And that's just kind of how I started with him. It was just kind of random and right place, right time. And, you know, Trae, you know, I moved up to New York. I planned on doing our pre-draft up there. I've been talking to Trae. I've been doing all this film last year. So we go over film after every game. And the plan was to do pre-draft in New York. And then all of a sudden, he wanted to do L.A. because Travell Gaines is out there. He wanted me to come with him. And so Travell does all the strength and conditioning. And Travell works with a lot of different clients in L.A. So obviously, with Trae being my main priority for pre-draft, I had to make that move. And from that, I ran into Candace Parker. She was working out actually with Trae in the weight room, and I was there working out too. And turns out she was looking for a new skills coach, and again, right place, right time. And she seemed to really enjoy it, and it stuck. And it's just kind of random how things like that work. So, you know, I'm a big believer in you got to get a little bit lucky, but you also have to know what you're doing. You have to, work really hard to put yourself in those situations to get lucky. So
exactly,
it's just one of those things where you never know what's going to come along. As long as you're continue to work hard, do things the right way, and you never know what kind of opportunities are going to kind of expose themselves.
Exactly, you know exactly what you mean. You got to put in the work to put yourself in a position. Exactly what you just said. Got to. The game has grown with the growth of transitional players. Well, positionless players, I'm sorry. So, I mean, with technology helping, how has technology helped you in your training and training players?
Oh, man, I was just talking to one of my buddies about this, who's a big trainer too. And we were saying, you know, it's two things that have happened. One, especially with younger players, it's everyone's becoming specialized in a sport a lot sooner than we ever have. And two, the technology based on social media and getting our names out there, like, you know, it would be really hard to do what we do without social media. And it's funny because trainers kind of get, you know, thrown under the bus sometimes because there's some ridiculous stuff out there, and it kind of hurts the guys who are doing it the right way. But I think it's important to show you know what you're doing, and I think it's important to kind of promote your athletes too. You know, like with Bobby going into his year, we were making sure we were releasing stuff that made him look extremely good. And it made him look like, hey, he can do different things within the role that he's asked. So the problem is with a lot of the teams that come in, they're put in a specific role, and that's all they work on in the off season with their teams. That's all they work on during the season with their teams. They don't really try to expand their guys' games, which is fine because that's what they need out of them. But it's also important for the teams to, hey, this guy can actually put the ball on the floor. He can make shots consistently from outside. Maybe we put him in a couple different opportunities that we might not have otherwise. So it's just an interesting world that we live in. I mean, you get hit up randomly on social media through different clients. Like, hey, I saw you work out so-and-so. I'd love to get a workout in. That's kind of how now I'm getting new clients is they see Trae shout me out, or they see Bobby shout me out, or they see me on Candace's Instagram, and it just creates a sense of validation. It helps you with building trust a lot quicker than you would have otherwise. So it's just weird. It's just weird how it works, but it's one of those necessary evils you have to have, but you have to be careful with how much you're putting out, how much you're giving away of your athletes. So there's definitely a sense of, you got to have trust first. I don't believe you. I mean, there's multiple guys that have worked out once or twice that I've kind of helped another trainer while they're away. But I just believe in, you know, not posting, not trying to use athletes that they aren't even your athletes. So it's just a sticky situation. There's a lot of guys that'll get a guy in the gym and they'll post them and, you know, they'll make a lot of money off them. And I just don't believe in that kind of thing. So it's just weird. It's a weird world we live in, but it is what it is. And we're just trying to navigate, figure out the best route.
I understand what you mean. They want to exploit the players that you're training. Yes, I like that.
Right.
I like that.
Right.
So is that, you know, are those, I know that's your set of some morals. Do other trainers follow that?
No, I don't know, because, you know, you'll see a lot of different, like a guy walks in the gym once and they'll put out five different posts throughout the next 5 months on them, you know? So it's just weird. I'm not going to sit there and badmouth other trainers for what they do. If they, you know, whatever they got to do to put food on the table for their family, go ahead, man. You know, it's just not something that I believe in. It's not something that I'll ever do. And I just think that the people that really know the game, that the people that are in that circle of the NBA, they all know who works with who. And you're not going to fool anybody that really matters. You might fool, you know, some of the masses in terms of, you know, local kids on Instagram or, you know, whoever it is on Instagram, but the people that really matter, they know who's working out with who, and they know who's actually getting these guys better. So that's what it comes down to. That's what I believe in. That's what I'll continue to do.
I'm sure every player you come across has a different skill set already in their arsenal. What do you focus on? What do you focus on with every player that you train? Like, what's your main focus?
Well, I'll look at the system is important. What system they play in, where they get their touches from are important. Like, even if you have two bigs, like I have Mo Wagner, who fifth, I think it was, by the Lakers, and Bobby Portis, that are both 6'11 guys. But, you know, I work them out completely differently just because of the touches that they're going to get and the looks that they're going to get. So I think it's important to prepare your guys for the role that they're in. I think that a majority of your workouts should be that. And then I think like another 25% should be trying to expand their game on what they want it to be. Because, you know, you're not going to get those opportunities to kind of showcase your skills if you're not doing a good job in the current role you have. Your role is never going to improve if you're not good in the role you have. So there's a lot of give and take. And I think it's something that you have to be upfront with the athlete that you get. So like, I'm not a guy that's going to be like, yeah, let's have fun and let's do these isolation moves for you, Mo, even though you got LeBron and Rondo on your team. And like, you're just not going to get those touches. Like, let's focus on the touches you're going to get. And then let's try to find little wrinkles we can put in within those touches that you get. So, and I think the athletes like that. It's no BS. This is what it is. You know, if you don't agree with it, it's just you being hard-headed, and you can find someone else that is going to tell you what you want to hear. But I think that's why I have such a good relationship with my athletes. They know I'm not going to, you know, I'm going to shoot them straight every time. If they're taking bad shots, we're going to talk about it. I'm going to say that was not a good shot. This is the shot that's going to get you on the bench, or if you're not showing enough effort on defense. And that's what we talk about with Bobby. Everyone knows you're going to score, but if you can rebound at a high clip, that's going to set you apart to another level. So it's just those honest conversations that you have to have with your clients, and it builds that trust. And then they can come back and say, well, here's what I'm thinking, here's what I'm seeing. And, you know, I'm not an idiot. If Trey tells me, hey, I'm seeing this, and it's something that maybe I didn't say initially, or I didn't agree with initially, I'm going to probably take, you know, what he says to heart, because he's the one that's doing it. He's the one that's seeing it. So I think as long as there's that trust that both guys are ultimately looking out for that main goal of let's make this player as successful as possible, then the rest is kind of easy.
Yeah, being open-minded and being able to take constructive criticism is a good quality to have in NBA, because you always get better by learning what you can do.
So millionaire ball players are humble, huh?
All the ones I work with, trust me, I've ran into a couple guys that, I won't name names, but there was a kid that was working out this summer. I would say he's a kid, but he's 2 or 3 years in, maybe. He actually just got cut, and we were talking about, I said, this is the first workout. I said, okay, here's what we're going to work on. We're going to work on this, and we're going to work on this. So we were going through the second thing. He was struggling with it, and he goes, yeah, I don't use this. He's like, I'm just not going to do this. I don't use this. I said, okay, well, I understand that. But at the same time, you just got cut from your first team. Like, we're going to have to add something different. We're going to have to do something different, man. Like, you can't just keep doing the same thing and expect the same results. And
exactly.
I don't think that was something he wanted to hear, and we never had a second workout. But it's okay. You know, I'm okay with that, because you just learn that personalities don't always mesh.
Right.
You can't just keep everyone happy, and it's going to hurt him. I hope he took it to heart, and I hope he took it to his next trainer and learned from it. You know, hopefully figures it out. But it's just something I've learned, that life's too short to just, you know, have guys just to have them. You know, it's just not fun. So everyone I work with, I love, I enjoy, and I'm extremely close with. And I think it creates a better atmosphere, and creates a better life on both ends.
Wow, that's it. It's unfortunate that, you know, some of them don't mesh, but like you said, personalities don't always mesh. So, does that happen more often than not? Like, what's the ratio between good relationships and ones that just don't work?
I'm not sure about other guys. I can only talk to my experience. I know there's quite a bit of NBA guys that have used multiple trainers. And when I say multiple trainers, I mean, like, there's always guys, everyone has one consistent guy. Now, you might have a guy that might happen to be in New York, and you might happen to be somewhere where they get in a couple of days of work with a guy, but everyone usually has someone consistently that they lean on, they trust for a fair amount of the off season. So I know there's quite a bit of guys that have bounced around, and you kind of know ahead of time who those guys will be coming into next off season. Like, there's a couple agents I've talked to, and it's like, hey, this guy's going to be looking for a skills guy. If you can get me some film on him throughout the year, I can shoot it to him, and we can kind of go from there. But me personally, I think I've maybe had, in terms of guys that didn't have a consistent skills guy that I didn't end up getting or keeping, maybe only, I think it was two or three. I can remember two pretty vividly. One was the story I gave, and the other one was literally right when I started. Kid who was in the G League trying to get to the NBA, never ended up working out. But I think that's it. Everyone else I've kept, and like I said before, a lot of people do want to get better, and they are realistic with where they're at and where they want to be. So as long as you have that person that understands what's going on, they're realistic with, you know, what they're trying to accomplish and where they're at, I think the rest is pretty easy. I'm not a guy that's going to sit there and scream and, you know, degrade anybody or say, you know, you suck, you need to do this. But I am honest, and I think it's something that's earned me respect with the clients that I've worked with. And, you know, certainly we have the relationship to, you know, pass the court on what's going on in their personal lives, that they can also kind of lean on me, and I can lean on them too. So, it's very few with me, but it, you know, it's happened, and I'm sure it'll happen again.
You touched on that Bobby Portis took it upon himself to come to a skill session 15 minutes early. How long does it take you to tell which client that you get really wants it? I mean, they come to you because they want to get better, but you can tell which client wants it. There's a difference. Like, how long does it take you to tell?
Usually a week at the most. Usually there's always that, you know, there's always a couple days, at least possibly a full week to for them to really trust you, right, and kind of let their guard down. But, a lot of people, you know, right away, just based on how they're interacting with you during the workout, you know, based on how many questions they're asking or how much feedback they're giving on if they're letting you know, this feels a little bit weird. Can you look at this? Typically guys that are super quiet or women that are super quiet, it's, you kind of get a sense of them being reserved. So, a lot of the first couple workouts are just icebreakers. So like with Candace, I don't know if you guys saw, she went on Area 21 and her and KG were going at it about the steps are in the women's game. He was like, that's absolutely a walk.
Yeah.
I can't believe y'all get away with that.
We talked about that just last week.
Yeah.
Well, a couple weeks ago with Katie Smith. We just talked about that. Yo. Is it a walk or is it not?
Well, shoot. It's a walk in the men's game, but the women's game, it's not. I don't know how, but it's not. And I use it to my advantage. Every single client of mine in the WNBA, we work on step-throughs nonstop. If you can pick the ball up and fake at the free throw line and run to the lane and finish at the rim, go for it.
I don't think it's a walk.
You know, we're gonna,
I honestly don't think it's a walk either way, because on the step through is when Candace releases the ball. So I don't think it's a walk. I've looked over it, like I looked at the video over and over and over again. And like the half, at one point, the first half of like the first 20 times I watched it, I was like, oh yeah, hell yeah, that's a walk. And then I look at it again and I'm like, nah, it can't be, because she's simultaneously releasing the ball as she's stepping through.
Right.
So I'm like, oh man, this is tough. And I'm leaning more towards it not being a walk.
Well, shoot, I teach it nonstop with my women. So, you know, if the ref doesn't call it, it's not a walk. That's how I look at it.
Right. Okay. Right. Well, yeah, that's a good way to look at it.
I think a lot of men are just salty because we can't do it. Like, I think we're just upset that we're not allowed to do it, to be honest. So we take it out on them. But it's funny, like, in terms of icebreakers, I think that was only a week, maybe a couple days before we started on the court for the first time. So the first thing I did, I said, all right, this is going to go one way. She's going to get pissed or she's going to think it's hilarious. I said, all right, here's the first thing we're going to do. You're going to catch the ball. You're going to take one dribble left. You're going to fake. And then I want you to step through and travel and get to the rim. And then she just started dying laughing. She was like, I get what you're trying. So it's just like stuff like that to like get their guard down. You know, getting better, you can have fun while you get better.
Right.
So there's always that times where we're sitting there and we're talking shit. You have to find ways to motivate your players. There's going to be days where it's like, man, we've been at this for 2.5 months straight. I want to get the season. I want to get going. I want to play live competition. So you just have to find ways to talk to them and get them going. And it's just funny. Like for Candace, it's usually, you know, Maya Moore or Brianna Stewart. I'm like, oh, I'm sure Stewie's getting better this morning. Looks like you're not going to get better. I'm sure Stewie's getting better. Just stuff like that. And same thing with Trey. It's finding players that motivate him.
Right.
So like, it's like, oh, okay, I can see why Trayvon Duvall, I can see why Colin Sexton was ranked higher in high school. This is making sense now. And it's just something that's like, oh, okay. All right, we'll see. So it kind of gets them to that next level of, you know, every athlete is, the reason they're there is because they're confident, because they're super competitive. So you have to find ways to pull that out in the days that might be more of a grind than others.
I see you forgot your cuss button this morning. It's all right.
Oh, that's my bad.
No,
you good. You good.
It's
you
all
good.
Right. It's all right. You cool. You cool with KG?
Yeah,
that was so funny on TNT. That was so funny on TNT. KG was like, he doesn't know shit about basketball.
Right.
Crazy. Hey, I'm surprised he doesn't do it more, to be honest.
Yeah, you said they tried to catch it after he said it.
Yeah.
It's too late. You dropped it then.
Too late. And you posted it immediately. That was real. I was like, John didn't waste any time posting that. Like, he was on it.
Yeah, man. The 73rd NBA season tipped off. Whew. LeBron came through like a storm. Year 16.
Yeah.
26,
yeah.
12, and 6.
Yeah.
He's a problem.
They got to play defense.
He's a problem.
They have to. They have to play, you know, defense. They can't give up 128 points. I'm sorry.
Nah, they can't. But yeah, I think they're still learning on You know, it's just tough when you even look at his Heat squad. I mean, they didn't, if you guys remember, like with him and Chris Bosh and D-Wade, they're all in their prime, but they kind of struggled out of the gate.
Yeah, didn't win in their first year.
You have a new system, you have a new team, you have a new coach, and it's just one of those things that the younger guys will start falling in line more and more and more. And you got two of the best leaders in the league with Rondo and LeBron. I think it's just a matter of time. I certainly think they're a playoff team. I think they might even sneak into that 5 or 6 seed if they figure it out sooner or later. But you never know. You know, I think you watch Golden State last night. They just find ways to win even when they don't play their best.
Jonas Jerebko.
they came back from down 17 last night.
Man, that's nothing.
I'm just saying, though. Like,
hey, you know what?
Houston's
I figured out how you pronounce Jonas Jerebko is actually not the right pronunciation.
Is it?
Do you guys know that?
No, I didn't.
It's Jonas Jerebko.
Jonas Jerebko. See, I like correct pronunciation. I love that. So thank you.
Idea. I've been calling him Jonas Jerebko too.
They all do.
I started calling him Jonas. Jonas.
Okay. Does. The announcers everyone do. Does. Everyone does. Yeah. Now I know.
I guess it's like some people have a pronunciation for Giannis's last name.
Yeah,
everybody pronounces it differently.
It's several. You even throwing the W in.
Yeah, I used to. I stopped that. I just get so mixed up seeing Giannis's last name. It was crazy.
Yeah, like you just say Giannis last name. That's all. say that Giannis last name. That's funny.
Oh man, yeah. Golden State improved to 2-0 early in the season. But Utah, they got a dangerous squad. Gobert. Donovan Mitchell, they're going to be a problem in the
and
West.
They're confident their performance from last year,
right,
where a lot of people thought they overachieved. And I actually thought Quinn Snyder was coach of the year based on what he had out there to work with and based on their success. I thought he was coach of the year. Not saying he's the best coach in the NBA per se, but he did the best job with what he had last season.
And losing Gordon Hayward. People expected him to take a step back by losing Gordon.
Right. But, you know, Donovan stepped in.
Right.
And Gobert was hurt for a good portion of the season, too. But he came back and, like, they did a tremendous job of galvanizing everyone else and making everyone else feel part of the organization. And they played their roles to a T. And they maximized the potential of that roster. And now they're coming in with the confidence from last year. And they're going to be a dangerous squad.
They are.
Yeah. No, I like that squad a lot. Can you imagine if Hayward was still there?
I know, right?
Whew.
I wanted him to stay.
I know.
I was hurt when I wanted him to stay.
He might be regretting it now. He might be regretting it now because they got a ton of wings over there in Boston with Jaylen Brown and Tatum, and they just have a lot of weapons over there. But
I think
Quinn Snyder actually, he started with Mizzou. Like, he kind of came up with Mizzou.
Mm-hmm.
And being a St. Louis kid, that was kind of the team we rooted for. So they had, like, Kareem Rush. They had all these
Kareem Rush. Wow.
Yeah.
We're really good in college. And it's just funny because he kind of, like, you know, you guys know the story on that, on kind of how it crashed and burned with him at Mizzou. But he's always been a great coach. And he was only, like, 20, maybe 28 at the time when he was coaching them, super young. But he's always been able to coach at every level, so I'm not shocked that he's got that team where he's got him now. I kind of always liked how he's coached.
I'm not shocked at all either, because like you said, in Mizzou, he did a damn good job. I think Gordon Hayward regretted it the moment he got hurt in game one of last season.
Yeah.
That's just my take on it.
You just never know. I mean, you just never know. It was definitely one of those great things. And I actually got the chance to watch Gordon work out quite a bit. He worked out with Drew Hanlon this summer. And he's just a super good dude. He's super competitive. I kind of got to watch that progression of him gaining his confidence back from just going in the lane and jumping. It's just one of those things that it's definitely going to be even more mental than physical.
Of
jumping in traffic and knowing that when you land, you're going to be all right. So it was like that first 3-on-3 game. It's like I was watching a bunch of unicorns out there. It was like Gordon Hayward, who no one's seen in a year. It was Markel Fultz, who's been working on his shot. No one's seen a shot for a year.
Right.
You got Joel Embiid talking trash. You got, you know, Mo Bamba out there. Tatum, who's kind of the next superstar, what people think. So it's just interesting to watch all those guys going at it, seeing everyone's confidence level continue to rise each day. So that was one of the more interesting things that I was able to witness this summer.
Yeah, speaking of Gordon Hayward, he's getting his footing back under him. He made a move last night where he came down at the foul line, crossed over, created space, and drove for the and one. That was crazy.
Yeah. He's got a little bounce back, which is good. A lot of it is, most of it is mental now. I mean, you're clear to play, so
yeah.
Now it's just the mental aspect of it, and he's gaining confidence, and that's a good thing to see.
Yeah, knowing he might come down on somebody's foot and turn his ankle and be okay with that, knowing he'll be okay.
Man.
Right.
So
I think some of it is also the team being a little bit, worried and reserved with how much they're going to use him too early on. Because I actually watched Gordon play one-on-one. I'm not going to name the guy who it was, but it was another all-star, and he was just torching him, like just killing him. And this is probably a month and a half ago. So I think Gordon's at the point where he can play with anybody. I think it's getting the rhythm back of an actual game of running up and down in five-on-five, just getting comfortable jumping in traffic. But, I mean, he was attacking, he was jumping, he was dunking, he was getting after on defense. So he was doing everything that he could do. So I think it's just that last little part of the confidence on not just him, but of the team knowing that he's going to be fine if he can get out there and play 30 minutes. So I think that's the last part or the last hurdle he's got to get over.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be fine. The G League turning heads. This opened up a lot of talks. This topic turned a lot of heads, man.
Yeah.
They're creating this professional path. And some WNBA players spoke on it because of the pay differential.
You already know my take on that, man.
Yes, this is a deep subject. But, yeah, they're offering $125,000 for a five-month season for select elite players, not every player. So every player is not going to be able to get this contract. It'll be the potential one and dones.
Right.
So the WME players got to take that into consideration also, because there's more G League teams than WNBA teams. I believe there's 12 WNBA teams.
There's more money allocated to the league because it generates more revenue, whether people want to believe it or not.
Right.
It's not. Listen. We're in the state and time where words get misconstrued. So I want to be very clear here.
Right.
I want to be very clear. I am all for women's rights and gender equality. This is not a gender issue.
This is a money revenue issue. Right.
The WNBA simply does not generate enough revenue to dole out more money to its players. Once it does that, then more money will be allocated for the players because everyone will be making more money. The owners will be making more money. The sponsors will be making more money. The TV companies will be making more money, which will in turn give them more incentive to give the WNBA a larger contract, which in turn will give the owners more incentive to pay their players more. It's all about the money. It's not about gender. In this instance, it's not.
Yes, because the NBA generated $7.4 billion recently. The WNBA generated $55 million.
There it is.
That's a big-ass gap where they can't pay the players.
I guess we just going to be cussing all episodes.
They can't pay the players. They can't pay the players, but NBA players make. There's no way. Because if they force...
Well, I don't think that...
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, you can go ahead, Alex. Go ahead.
I think... the issue isn't the girls, and trust me, I've been around a lot of WNBA girls, and we've had this conversation. I've listened to it multiple times. They're not asking to be paid like men. They don't think that they should be. I think that they're all just frustrated. Like if you saw, like I think Asia Wilson and Shanae Gumake or two that kind of tweeted on it.
Right.
They were just kind of frustrated. It's like, hey, can I play in the G League and make this? Well, to be honest with you, their season's a little shorter than the G League actually, and those girls will be making one, 10 or whatever the max is.
115.
And then they can go overseas and they can make 10 times as much as they want. Or, you know, Shanae's working with ESPN, Candace working with TNT. So, you know, their thing is they get 20% of revenue shares and the NBA is getting closer to 50%.
Right, right.
But at the same time, like you guys said, there's just not that much room for error because of, I mean, these owners aren't getting rich off the WNBA.
Right.
And if they're not making any money, it's hard to, you know, unless they just love women's basketball and they have more money to know what to do with, what's the point of them owning a team? There's none.
I think none at all.
The women understand that. I think the women understand that. But I think that now the sticky situation is the NBA is becoming more involved. And the WNBA just lost their president, Lisa Borders, to another job.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I believe Adam Silver is going to be the interim guy that's going to step in and take things over, which I think would be great. Obviously, I think he's done as good a job as anyone for the NBA. But now it's getting misconstrued of them saying, well, Adam Silver's got all this budget. Why didn't he throw us some money? Well, it just doesn't work that way. The pots are different. The pots are split.
Exactly.
Just because, like, just look at someone who owns multiple companies. Just because you have one company that's doing really well and the other one that's just kind of barely hanging on, you're not going to take all the money from that one company and throw it into the other company and start, you know, rewarding them. Unless it's warranted. But I think it's the one big problem right now is the marketing. I think it's hard. It's hard to make that next step if you don't take that risk and market yourselves. I think until owners are willing to say, hey, we might risk this all and we might go under, rather than continue to do things the same way and hope for different results. I think if you're going to own a team, own it and try to make a big push for marketing and getting people to the games and getting people to understand that these women can actually hoop. I've yet to, you know, I took a buddy of mine who is actually another trainer and works with a lot of high end athletes. I took him to a Sparks game. He's like, yo, this is dope. Like, I didn't even think that like it would be this fun to watch. So I think it's until you get more eyes on the game, it's never really going to grow. So I think that's the biggest issue that kind of needs to be stepped in and addressed. And two, WNBA is the only league where the head coach is making more than the star player. So you look at all the professional leagues, name professional league where you got your head coach making more than the star player on your team. It just doesn't happen. So, like, I know that I won't name the exact coach, but they're making three times as much as one of the top players in the league. Three times as much. So I think until you start realizing that people aren't coming to games to watch, like if they're coming to the games, they're not coming to watch the head coach of this WNBA team.
Right.
They're going to come watch Maya Moore. They're going to come watch Deladon. They're going to come watch Candace. It doesn't matter. So that's one of the issues I think needs to be addressed right off the bat.
Exactly. Also, the lack of the NBA has a multi-billion-dollar television deal. The WNBA doesn't have that. So that makes team operating costs. That comes off of the players' revenue. It affects them more, so they got to take more of that for operating costs. And plus, they got ticket sales at average ticket for a WNBA game is $17. You know, we used to pay to go to an NBA game. You know, sitting behind a bench is a good $150. That's behind the bench. That's not on the floor.
Easy. That's floor.
Yeah, you're talking about thousands, $5,000.
They don't even show you the prices for the floor. They say
a package.
They say check in with us for details.
Right.
That's what they say.
If you have to ask, you can't afford one of the things.
Exactly. But here's the thing. And back to the WNBA and the 20% that the players get. The owners would be fools to give them 50% because they're not pulling in any money.
Right. They got to fill the stadium for that.
It's a business. So I understand why the players in the NBA make 50%. Why that deal is like that, because 50% of how many billions of dollars of revenue?
Right.
It's a lot to go around.
Yes.
Yep.
So I don't get why people are so up in arms, because it's simply simple math. It's just money. There's not a lot of money being doled out in the WNBA, period. And you can't, like right. you said, you can't just, well, why can't the NBA just float us alone? Nah. It's been doing that. The NBA right. has been doing that. They have kept the WNBA afloat right. for years. They have been giving them money and stuff like that, but just for the sake of giving them money just so players can be happy, that's not good business practices at all.
I think the WNBA signed their last collective bargaining agreement in 2014, I believe. They can opt out after this upcoming season, 2019 season. I think their focus should be on their collective bargaining agreement and not what the NBA brings in.
But that's always going to be the standard. That's always going to be the bar. People are always going to look at it and compare, like, well, theirs is like that. Why can't ours be like that?
And it goes back to revenue, though.
It goes back to revenue, but apparently people don't get that part. Apparently,
that's my thing. They need to focus on the revenue they bring in, and they have a collective bargaining agreement coming up they can opt out of to get their salaries to where they can agree with each other.
Yeah.
Because they're not going to bring in them as much money as NBA does. They're never going to do that. I mean, there's teams like Seattle, like the Seattle Storm, Las Vegas Aces. Those teams flourish because of their fan base and location.
And those teams flourish because of their fan base, because their right. fan base is hungry for basketball.
Right.
You know?
And every WME team doesn't have that. Yeah. Some of those stadiums don't have that support. Those teams don't have that support.
Yeah. Huh. Absolutely correct. The product needs to draw in viewers and draw in more fans and retain those fans, which in turn will generate money exactly. for the players. Period. End of exactly. discussion.
I just think that there needs to be the WNBA is in a tough spot because their season is actually in summertime, and summertime is when everybody's doing everything. You're traveling, you're hanging out with friends, you're staying up late. A lot of people on their minds isn't to take their family and go to a sporting event because in the winter times it's like, well, what else is there to do? Let's, you know, it's freezing. Let's go somewhere inside. Let's watch, you know, so-and-so play, whoever it is. So I think they're competing with that. And I just think that they're just in a tough spot, but I think there can be something done for marketing in terms of using their players more. And I think some of the onus is on the players too, of interacting with fans more. I mean, you're closer with fans now more than ever when you, in terms of accessibility with social media. So why not take time to write back five people in a day that are hitting you up on Twitter, hitting you up on Instagram. It's like, yo, I hope you can come to the game, blah, blah, blah.
True.
It might seem like something that's below them, but again, don't sit there and complain if you're not going to really work at changing the culture, changing the mindset of getting people to games. I've heard every WNBA player, and I agree with them, say, you know, the people that rip on the WNBA are people who, one, don't watch it, and two, have never really hooped before. So until you start getting people to games and filling it up, and,
right.
and it starts changing the belief and the culture around the women's game, then nothing's going to change. But so some of that's on the women to kind of get out there and put themselves out there and start inviting people to games, and whatever they have to do, they have to do. But I think something needs to be figured out on the marketing standpoint. I mean, there's too much access now to not be filling out stadiums, to especially if it's Candace or Maya Moore or whoever it is. I mean, that should be easy.
Right. They could also promote their promote the season. They got to promote the season better. So it'll work. It'll definitely work out though. Because I know most of their gripes were like key players like Deanna Taurasi. Her 2018 salary was around $114,000. She's arguably the GOAT of the league. And they're bringing these youngsters in fresh out of high school making $125,000. So that's what got their got them going from the door. Like, they're making more.
I see why you would be upset.
But it was like the revenue.
I see why you'd be upset. But you got to be upset with the circumstances.
Right.
You can't take it personally. You have to be upset with the circumstances surrounding the business.
True.
That's what you have to be upset about, and try to find ways to make that better so that you can get your cut, and then players down the line can get their cut. Players of the future can get what they feel like they deserve. I mean, let's keep it real. The NBA, WNBA is 20 years in, but it's still like it's still a baby. And there's these players right now are forging the road. They're right. They're paving the way right. for the players of the future.
Like Mike and
like when the NBA was 20 years old, it was 1968, and a lot of those dudes had jobs in the offseason.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? They were paving the way for players to make millions of dollars right. 30, 40, and 50 years later. They didn't know they were pioneers, and they probably look today like, damn, I wish I was playing today. But they were just in that era at that particular time. So right. it is what it is. Bob Cousy had 2 part-time jobs in the summer after winning 8 straight championships.
Crazy, man.
It just is what it is, man. That was the era they were in.
You and know that's what, the, though?
Yeah.
There's a lot of women, they aren't hurting for money.
No, so, not at all.
I mean, like I know Candace got over $1 million offer to go play in China. I don't know what her offer was in Russia. So, like, the top players, even, like, the top rookies, if you were drafted in the first round or 2 rounds, they're going over and they're making easily $150K in 6 months.
So, 6 months.
Regardless, they're fine. You know,
they're fine, right?
Yeah.
They're not going to make as much as the NBA guys. They know that. I think they're just frustrated at the point to where, how can we change where we are and how can we get there quicker?
The CBA is coming up. Their CBA is coming up.
I think if they can actually opt out October 30th,
yeah,
I think it's even quicker. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
We going to see a WNBA lockout?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't think so.
Well, I don't know. Because I know a lot of their deals with their shoe deals are like they have to play in the WNBA because that's where they can market them. You know, I mean, they don't have right. big shoe deals, but everyone signs with Nike or Adidas or Under Armour, whoever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And they have these obligations. That's why, like Diana Taurasi, her team in Russia actually paid her not to play. The WNBA.
Right. Exactly. Took a year off.
You know, right. So it's just interesting. I mean, the WNBA is their second job. If you think of it, as crazy as that is, that's their second job. Like, I guarantee Candace and Shanae, who are doing broadcasting stuff, are probably making more in the off season with their programs than they did in the WNBA.
I agree.
Which is kind of what they're known as.
I agree.
But they're all figuring it out. They're finding ways to take advantage of the exposure that they're getting.
Right.
And to touch on the fact that the G League's going to pay these players $125K, I think you're still going to have players that would rather go to college because, like, if Trey, think about Trey's situation. If Trey would have went to the G League, would he have been in the same opportunity to kind of run the show as he did
right.
in college? I mean, probably not. So I think you're still going to get a lot of players just go to college for the experience. Like, I mean, RJ Barrett, the kid's going to probably be the number one pick. You think he really is going to go and ride on 9-hour bus rides and playing back to backs and live, you know, a crappy life for a year, $120,000? Or is he going to go to Duke where he's probably still getting some kind of payment?
they're finding
some way to keep him comfortable. And he gets to play, you know, at Duke and on a national ESPN probably 10 times this year. I just think exposure-wise, it's still smarter for these top players to go to college.
Exactly, because some of the players, you'll be playing in half-empty gyms. You're not going to get the exposure, right. as you just said. It's a totally different exactly. – and you're going up against grown men that's playing for their livelihood. Some of those players may look at exactly. the young guy coming in making 125, saying, oh, no, you're not going to take my spot. I've been here for how long?
Exactly.
You're not going to come in and get to the NBA before me. I'm going to show you this work real quick. And that might start right. their growth. So you're right.
Right.
There's still going to be a whole lot of players going to Duke, Kentucky, to these high-class colleges for that experience and exposure. So,
well, if you lose your confidence, you're done. You can't play. So, if it's my kid, if my kid's a top, you know, a projected lottery pick in a year, I'm absolutely sending him to college. I want him around players that
right.
will make him better, but he's going to keep his confidence level high.
Right.
I mean, that's why you you don't see a lot of rookies that come in and play 35 minutes because the coaches are so worried about them going out and laying an egg and them slowly continuously losing confidence that you can't, it's hard to get back. So I think that's a big part of, you're going to continue to see players choose college over the G League.
I believe that too. Alex, I had a hypothetical question for you before we let you go. 49 yep. years ago this week, the great Kareem Abdul-Jabbar came into the league and dropped 29 points in his debut. What would you, if you had a chance to work with him when he came in as a rookie, looking at his body of work, all his accomplishments, what would you train him on?
Kareem, if I was in today's game?
If he was in, if
or
he,
back then?
Today's game.
Today's game?
Yeah.
Just shooting. That's it. I mean, like, he had the sky hook. I don't care what move you work on. It's like, yo, if you get the ball, just do your sky hook if you're within, you know, 10 to 15 feet to wrap. So, like, what are you going to do? Why would you change any part of his game of what makes him who he is? The only thing you can do is just hope to add another aspect. So, like, with, honestly, all I would do is just continuously work on what he's great at.
Right.
He's averaging 30. What are you going to really, like, like, that's like me, that's like me training KD. It's like, all right, let's scrap everything that you have and let's change the player you are.
Right.
Why? You know, it doesn't make sense. So, I don't know. I mean, that's maybe all you're good at. That's why I tend to like working with guys that need to add something. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I like the challenge of figuring out ways to get this player to the next level. It's hard to get Kareem to the next level. Is he really, like, it's funny, I had a conversation with Kobe and I was like, okay, so in terms of like who you worked out with, what did you do? He's like, I didn't really have a workout guy. I just had a rebounder. He's like, I knew everything I needed to do. I mean, it was just about me getting reps.
Right.
He's like, I had already mastered everything of what I needed and I knew what I needed. So it was just getting the reps in. So like, he didn't really have, like, he had guys he worked with, but it was never him showing up to the gym and being like, all right, what are we doing today? It was more so him showing up to the gym and telling the guy, here's what we're doing today. So, you know, I just think that's the way it would be. Same with Kareem. You know, what are you going to really change?
Oh, before we let you go, we always got to ask this question for our guests. It's becoming a tradition now at NBA panel. Mike or LeBron? Yeah.
Mike.
Because of what he did for the game?
He's not even going to explain it. It's just Mike.
Oh, you want
Mike.
To get into detail?
Absolutely, yes.
I'm a Midwest boy. I grew up in St. Louis. Chicago is the closest team we have. I was born in 90. So I got to, on his second three-peat, I was old enough to know what was going on, but I just think that, you're not going to go wrong with either player. LeBron has done things that we've never seen. They play in different eras. I think it's kind of unfair because, you know, LeBron has the advantage of all these recovery and all this different stuff that Mike never had. So, you know, could Mike have been a different player if he was in this era? I don't know. You know, would he have been bigger, stronger, faster? I think just the mindset of people don't talk about this enough with Mike is he was basically like a quick Kawhi Leonard in terms of defense. So like, he's a guy that would literally come in and just shut you down. And LeBron has turned into that, like at times where he knows he has to get a stop, he's going to sit down and he's going to lock up. But like Mike, I mean, you couldn't breathe. Like, it wouldn't matter if you had the quickest guy on the court, the strongest dude on the court. He could, him and Scottie were locking people up like crazy. So,
right.
I just think that, and this is the best way I can describe it. And if you had a game for your life, so if you had to bet one game for your life that you live if they win and you die if they lose, who are you putting your money on for one game? If it's the finals in game 7, who are you going to put your life on? Mike or LeBron?
You asking me? I mean, I'm leaning more towards LeBron these days. We haven't seen a freak of nature like LeBron James, and for him to sustain it, he's in year 16, man. He's in year 16, and he still looks like the premier athlete in the NBA. And usually, when you have such a freak of nature like that athletically, the basketball IQ really doesn't match the athleticism. His surpasses the athleticism. The athleticism is not the best part of his game. His mind is, which is astounding to me, to be one, quite possibly the greatest athlete who ever stepped foot in the NBA, and to still have arguably the highest IQ of all time in NBA history. That's just crazy to me. And the 2016 finals pretty much sealed the deal for me, where he beat a 73-9 team in Game 7 at Oracle, or and had one of the great.
Oh wow,
you were there!
Wow,
yeah, I took my dad for Father's Day. It's funny because there were three things that happened that year. One was Derek Jeter's last game in Yankee.
Right,
I checked out. I was ready to go on PayPal, or I was ready to go on StubHub. Didn't do it. Two, Kobe's 60-point game, I think, was that year, right?
Yes, it was.
Didn't do it. And Kobe was my That was my guy growing up. That was my basketball idol growing up. Didn't do it. So finally, Game 7 rolled around. Like, all right, screw it. I'm gonna get online. I'm gonna get these tickets. I'm taking my pops. We're rolling. So I was sitting there. We were like 15 rows up on the corner on the same side. Kyrie hit that shot. LeBron had that. Like, we literally had the perfect view of LeBron getting that chase down block. Kyrie coming down for that step out on the corner or on the wing for the game.
Right.
So trust me, man. I'm not saying that for right now, I have MJ, but it's not by a long, long shot. And LeBron still got years to change that. I'm just saying that I have some bias because that's how I grew up, and that's kind of who I grew up watching at a young age. And you get the older heads saying, Mike. I just know I watch a lot of the film too. And I think that if LeBron's career ends today, I think it's still Mike, just based on same way you pick Tom Brady probably over, you know, like a Dan Marino or Aaron Rodgers.
Right.
I just think it comes down to that something that you can't explain that they have. They just know they had the ball in their hands in the last drive or the last play. It's a wrap. And I think LeBron's developing more and more into that. And I agree with what you're saying with year 16, but I think someone who doesn't get enough credit is Kobe. Look at his numbers in year 16. If you'd be shocked to look, if you guys look up his numbers. In year
16, I already know him. He averaged 27. He had 27 points a game. Yeah. And I think that was 2012, 2013 when they were struggling with Dwight Howard, Steve Nash, and those guys. And Kobe pretty much almost willed them in the last portion of the season to the playoffs. And they got the seventh seed, I believe. But then Kobe ruptured his Achilles and they got beat by the Spurs in the first round.
And he walked off after he hit two free throws.
Like a G.
Yeah, a lot of people talk about the 2016 finals, about that shot that Kyrie made, but he overlooked the block that LeBron, not the block, the shot doesn't happen. So a lot of people put the shot before the block, but it doesn't happen like that.
Right.
Alex, thank you so much. Oh, go ahead. So we got Alex, thank you so much.
It's just funny.
Go ahead.
I just think it's funny because, like, one play can change the course of someone's career and how you look at them. Like, I mean, even look at Tom Brady. He considered the GOAT if the Seahawks run the ball instead of throw it on the 1 yard line.
Right.
So it's just like, I'm with you. It's the body of work. It's hard to argue against LeBron.
Absolutely.
I think it's LeBron. I think it's MJ and LeBron, and I think honestly Kobe's up there for me. And then I think there's a little drop in terms of guards. So that's where I'm at.
Cool. Alex, thank you for joining us. We have to do this again when you're available. This was a good episode.
Great
thank
episode.
You so much.
Thank you so much.
Your time.
All right, fellas. I appreciate it.
And get well soon.
All right, my man.
All right, talk to you soon.
All right, bye.
Yes, that was Alex Bazell, Pure Sweat NBA Skills Trainer.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for coming through.
Bro,
where can he find you?
They can find me laughing my ass off at all these Facebook posts. That's happening right now. But no, seriously.
Man.
You You can find me at BrianIsleyLive.com. All my show updates and events are updated, so check that out. Go click Brian Isley Live and logo, the link for the clothing, the link for the merch. Click the link for that. Also, follow me on Brian Isley at Instagram, at Brian Isley Live on Twitter, and search the Brian Isley Show on Facebook. And download logo, Laugh or Get Offended.
And follow me, panel, all social medias, keyword NBA panel. Only one on the internet. Thanks for joining us. Catch you next week.
Later.
You've been listening to the NBA panel with John Weatherspoon and co-host Brian Isley. Follow the NBA panel on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And don't forget to subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher for Android.